I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are in this new era where the strike is over, and it's got me reflective about my career.
Okay.
You know what made me think of? Did I tell you that my first job was Blockbuster in high school?
Did you tell me, girl? What are you talking about? I've known you for 20 years. Actually, I think I remember seeing pictures of you like working at Blockbuster. So,
in my little uniform?
Your little cute uniform. You're such a helper, though. I can imagine like sitting behind a little desk, like giving movie recommendations and stuff. Talk to me about that uniform, though. Because it was like pre-Target, right? It was like
a khaki pant. I was into a capri from Old Navy.
Capri. Wait, capris were in then. You're so right. They were in.
Yeah, but you know what, bitch? I was ahead of the curve and I'm still pissed about it because they were saying I was wearing high waters. No, I was wearing pedal pushers before they were cool.
Oh my God.
And so then many the next
are
year.
Coming out of my mouth right now. Go, continue.
And I was wearing a capri pant with my little dark blue Blockbuster polo, my little name tag.
Pusher. Is that what they were?
That's what a capri was called.
In like the 1970s.
Yeah. I like being historically accurate. You feel me? But I loved working at Blockbuster. I took full advantage of my free rentals and no late fees. Bragging a little.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Free rentals, okay. No late fees, though? No. Wow, the perks of employment. You know what the worst thing about those late fees was, though? Mm-hmm. A shared account, right? Because you would show, and I know you had this all the time working there. You would show up and you'd be like, oh, I got my movie for the night. And they'd be like, wrong. You didn't return your last one. And it turns out it was just your family member on your shared account.
Oh, yeah, it's so true. Were you racking up the late fees?
Who dare you? No, I put Mr. Blockbuster's kids through college with those damn late fees, for real.
We're going to talk about late fees this episode, for real. But before we get into late fees, when I was working at Blockbuster, we would always play 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. And I had one manager who was very good at it. I'm sure you remember this game as a cinephile.
Oh, yes. No, I very much know this game. Do I play it well? No. But tell the class how you play it.
Okay. So if you've never heard of this game, the premise is if you are a real film and TV buff, you should be able to connect any actor to Kevin Bacon in 6 moves or less, aka 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Which is hilarious because, I mean, it's just crazy that how did this happen for Kevin Bacon? I don't know.
I don't know.
But I mean, listen, I will say this. He stays booked and busy and he has a full ass head of hair. So there's something, he's doing something right, right?
He's doing something right.
Okay. I want to manifest like 6 degrees of DeLon Grant's career, like where you take my 200 self tapes and you give me a job. you say, what movies should DeLon have been in?
6 degrees of DeLon didn't book.
He
didn't book this one. My career.
The strike is over, so maybe he might start booking. Okay.
Okay. Maybe he will. Okay. So I also admit that I do not know Kevin Bacon's resume like that. But in the spirit of my Blockbuster days, I thought we could play the same game, but with Beyonce. I'm calling it 6 DBs of Beyonce. Hold for laughs.
I'm not laughing for the reason you think I'm laughing.
Okay, get it? Degrees and bees. The beehive. The bees.
No, friend, we get it. we got it. She loves a fucking pun. You play the game.
Okay. So I'm going to give you an example and then you can try. And class, feel free to play along at home. So I'm going to try Beyonce and the Cash Me Outside girl. Remember her?
Oh,
from
God.
Dr. Phil?
Catch me outside. How about that?
Catch you outside? What does that mean?
What I just said.
Ooh, girl, that's from The Recesses. You grabbed that. Yes, okay.
I wish I could forget her. But Cash Me Outside, how about that? Okay, so 6 DBs of Beyonce.
Okay.
So Beyonce was in the Fighting Temptations movie with Cuba Gooding Jr. Do you remember that?
Ooh, God, The Recesses, friend. Yes, totally.
I love this. Cuba Gooding Jr. was in Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Tom Cruise famously jumped on Oprah's couch up and down.
Yes.
That's a credit in my mind.
Yes.
Oprah introduced us to Dr. Phil, and unfortunately, Dr. Phil introduced us to Cash Me Outside Girl. 5 DBs, bitch.
Whoa. You know what? I'm giving it to you. That is impressive and depressing, impressing? Depressive? Press squared? I don't know. You know, you're the pun queen, you tell me.
Okay. Well, you know what? I like that you tried. Okay. So look here. All right. So I'm going to give you 2 names. Beyonce and Florence Pugh. That's the British white girl from, she was in Midsommar and Little Women.
Oh God, two movies my gay ass has not seen yet. I know who I care to. Okay. Okay. Can I work backwards?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay, great. So Florence Pugh was in Don't Worry, Darling with Harry Styles.
Yes.
And Harry Styles had that old unseasoned ass elevator music first album that was nominated for a Grammy. And we know Beyonce should have won that Grammy. 2 DBs of Beyonce, bitch.
Ooh, wait. No.
Listen.
wait.
I hate you for that.
Let me fix it.
Welcome back to Let Me Fix It, the podcast that asks why juggernaut brands became nostalgic farts in the wind. I'm DeLon Grant. I'm an actor, a writer, and a photographer.
And I'm Francesca Ramsey. I'm an actress, a producer, and a writer, and a former graphic designer. And this week's episode is very near and dear to my heart. As a TV writer and the home of my very first W-2, that's right, this episode is all about Blockbuster.
Yeah, and Fran, I think this topic is just so perfect for our show because it combines all the things we love. Media, tech, millennial nostalgia, and of course, a brand's unbelievable fall from grace. Mm-hmm. So in the 90s and early aughts, that's right, I said it, Francesca, because I know you
love it. Aughts. I'm surprised you say naughties.
Naughties.
You are the one trying to make naughties happen, sir. The brand is falling because of you.
Now you called me Gretchen Wieners over here. So in the 90s and the early 2000s, Blockbuster absolutely dominated the movie rental market with thousands of locations worldwide and over 45 million customers.
But by 2010, the company was forced to file for bankruptcy. And today, there is only one physical Blockbuster left standing in the world. So we are going to dive into how the video rental giant went from let's make it a Blockbuster night to not a Blockbuster in sight. And then... okay, she's a writer. She not on strike anymore.
It's also the delivery. You better go.
Okay, so as always, after we dive into their history, we are going to pitch how we would revamp the brand for today. So Blockbuster, let me fix it. So our story begins in the early 1980s when buying a VHS tape was so expensive that renting was the only solution. Now, DeLon, can you guess how much a VHS tape cost in the mid-80s?
I feel like I'm on Jeopardy right now. Yo,
you're not going to win any money.
It's like, I got no money to give you.
I have nothing to, despite what Instagram thinks, your girl
millionaire. It was like $100 or something, right? It was like really expensive.
You are in the right ballpark. It was around $89, which is roughly $336.
Whoa.
Today.
Is that inflation?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So, you know, because it was so expensive, most rental places were small mom and pop stores, so they could not afford to have multiple copies of movies. So in those days, it was not uncommon for your local rental store to only to have one copy, and then there'd be a waiting list for the most popular movies. Enter Blockbuster, the brainchild of Texas husband and wife David and Sandy Cook. When their computer software company started to flounder in the 80s, they went searching for the next big thing.
What they found was a giant, gaping, hungry, loose, cavernous hole of a market share.
Not you so thirsty that talking about the market starts getting you all hot and bothered, sir.
Single, ready to mingle.
Get your mind out of the fucking gutter.
Always in the gutter, you know me. So they found a big hole in the market share left by the small local rental video stores. They also saw the number of home VCRs were climbing and expected to double by the 90s. P.S. This is kind of reminding me of Kodak, all these companies and brands that fell. Class, just take some notes here, you know, from us here. Let me fix it. Before you start a business, you got to research the competition and then see where there's an opportunity to seize it. Okay.
I love that. I mean, even though it didn't work out for them, clearly, because they're a topic of our show. But I will add that that is also a great strategy for making life moves. You know, survey what's going on out here and then see where you could get in, where you could fit in.
That's right. That's right. That part. You hear her? So the Cooks came up with the idea for a video superstore. The plan? Offer a big movie selection and thus beat out the competition. For their first location, they picked a spot near a number of upscale apartments, aka close to people with disposable income who could afford VCR players. So smart.
So smart.
Right?
So smart.
Like, I wouldn't even think that.
I would have never. They were like, y'all got some money. Let's put a store right here.
Well, and here's my question. I wonder what VCRs cost at the time. If the movies were $100, the VCRs had to be like your whole home.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? You had to have a lot of money to have a VCR at that time.
So the Cooks also invested $800,000 into the business, which is around $2 million today with inflation. And of course, it's all history. It paid off. Breaking news. That's my breaking news sound.
Okay.
This just in, some people with money were smart about making more money with their money.
It's always so funny because I feel like every day there's some rich person being like, if you just set aside $1,000 a month by the end of the year, you're like, bitch, who has $1,000 to set aside? Like, of course you guys had... You know, they are always just cut out Starbucks. Stop eating avocado toast.
You know what? And listen, for the poor person, they're just like, yo, all I have is Starbucks. Starbucks brings me joy in this moment.
That is my one indulgence every, you know, few weeks or so. And so when you hear these stories, again, they obviously created a big business, but they had money to begin with to invest in the business.
Right. You have money to make money. You need money to make money. And on the first day they opened this business in 1985, there was a line around the block waiting for the doors to open. Now, unlike the mom and pop stores, Blockbuster offered a wider range of movie titles with multiple copies. Now, why did they do that? Because Blockbuster, again, Fran, could afford to buy the copies because they had an investment. Most of the mom and pop shops had to participate in a revenue share with the movie studios, making the latest inventory available. So like,
okay, not the studios being a pyramid scheme back then and today.
You know, and riddle me this, this went to the Supreme Court because the movie studios did not want to, you know, if you bought a movie, they were like, no, you can't make money on the movie. But
that is so...
But these small mom and pop shops went to the Supreme Court. And then eventually the Supreme Court was like, no, there's a thing where like, if you sell me a shirt, Fran, you can't say...
It's my shirt.
Yeah. You can't say, well, if you sell that to, you know, out of the closet, then I need a commission on that. No, I bought the product from you. Anyway, so another factoid. Blockbuster also made the rental checkout process digital and thus a lot quicker. They could rent more movies faster, thus make more money, right? Another major difference in their business model, the company charged late fees for overdue rentals as a primary source of revenue. Now, little did Blockbuster know that those fees would later come to bite them in the butt. That became part of their downfall.
Ooh, it's coming. It's like, dunna, dunna, dunna. We got the Jaws reference.
Yo, cute. I'm giving it to you.
Thank you very much. So within a year, business was so good that the company invested in a $6 million distribution warehouse with a giant library of VHS tapes for just four locations.
Are you kidding? Wow.
Mom and pop, y'all are shit out of luck because Blockbuster has the inventory. Seriously. So in 1987, They sold the company to several investors for a whopping $18.5 million, which is about $36 million today.
Wow. Okay.
So these new investors were super aggressive about expanding the company, buying up existing small rental stores, and opening up countless Blockbuster locations. It's giving Monopoly.
Kinda.
Monopoly men. So within a year, Blockbuster was America's top video rental chain with over 400 stores nationwide. Blockbuster's success led to rapid expansion throughout the late 80s and 90s, and the company adopted a franchise model, allowing individual store owners to license the Blockbuster name and benefit from the corporate brand. Now, fun fact, the store that I worked in was a franchise. I was a junior in high school, and then I was there my senior year. Also in college for a few years, I worked there. There was actually three different locations. They were owned by the same guy, and we would bounce around at the different stores, and there was always drama. It was always like, who's going to be in the better store?
Oh, which one was the better store?
The one off of Lake Worth Road was very cute. I remember like the all of the cool guys would like park in the parking lot and like hang out and like smoke weed and stuff. It was kind of like they would come in and like do a loop through the store and all the girls would be like, like, you
God, the things we did in high school, the things like we had nowhere to be. And so like you go,
we had nowhere to be. Like I would wear my like little blue eyeliner to match my Blockbuster outfit.
I
was in the cute store.
I know she would. Wait, I also like, this is, well, you'll tell me if it's a pun or not, but you said franchise and I was like, oh, was it a franchise? Is that?
Okay, wait a second. I'm putting that in the vault because I feel like the day I actually book a job and can put some money into something, I'm starting a franchise.
Yes, yes, yeah. Please market that. So the stores really became known for their distinctive blue and yellow signage and their make it a Blockbuster night branding. By the 1990s, Blockbuster had gone international and was bought up by the media powerhouse Viacom.
Okay, now I get to chime in with a nerdy branding factoid. This is me in my DeLon era. So I just feel like Make It a Blockbuster Night is such a good slogan.
So smart.
Let me tell you why. So Blockbuster became a saying in the 1940s in reference to Blockbuster bombs that were capable of destroying a whole block of buildings. Then in 1943. I know, it's kind of like very morbid.
Wow.
I know, this is so interesting to me. So in 1943, there was a movie ad in Variety magazine that described the film as a blockbuster of all action thrill service shows. And from then, Blockbuster became synonymous with a successful movie, making it the perfect name for a movie store, okay?
So
and
smart.
Then you'd really drive the brand home by making a Blockbuster night a call to action. Does the class hear how turned on I am right now, okay? The basement is flooded.
She's rubbing her nipples currently.
I mean, listen, I'm sorry. The brand is branding, and
the
I
brand
love
brand.
It.
Wait, no, you're so right, though. Make it a Blockbuster night. The call to action is so smart because, like, I want to rent a movie, but I don't want to go to the movies. I want to actually just sit at home and be with my family or go on a date or have, you know, it was the, you know, Netflix and chill before Netflix and chill.
I was
right?
literally about to say it, like, predates Netflix and chill. It's so clever, which is why their fall from grace is fascinating.
I know. I also just love that you're such a graphic designer. You're like, the branding.
It's so true.
One of the other soft branding things that Blockbuster created was a culture, like we're just kind of talking about, for around movie going. Mm-hmm. I loved going to Blockbuster. Like, again, I had nothing to do in high school. I would just like roam around with friends in high schools trying to find a movie to rent, aka just loitering, you know, because we had nowhere else to be. But you got to hold the case, you know, something tangible. You got to read the synopsis and see, like, oh, what might I want to read? What candy am I gonna buy? You know, also, because you worked there, riddle me this. What was up with the smell in that place? Wasn't that always like a distinctive smell?
I mean, in our store, it was weed. Somebody put a joint in the box one time and we smoked that motherfucker.
Which in
was
the box?
Probably somebody left a joint in the movie box. I will never forget this. And I had this one manager that we all thought was so cute. He was not cute. I looked him up on Facebook and I was like, damn, the goggles, the high school goggles have me see something in that grown ass man. I don't know what it was. He was only like a few years older than us, but like we just thought he was so cool.
Yeah.
And we smoked that joint.
Listen, waste not, want not, girl, please. Especially, and that at that point, it was still illegal. No, give it to me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm amazed that I didn't end up on the back of a milk carton. I feel like there was probably something in that. Like, I mean, who gives a good joint away? Right? But like,
right.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
At its peak in 2004, Blockbuster employed 84,000 people, including Francesca, worldwide, and they had over 9,000 stores.
Wow.
Blockbuster also played a significant role in popularizing the VHS and later DVD formats. The company introduced innovations such as the concept of new releases and membership programs. Back to the branding of it all. Like, get
so
it.
Smart.
That's so smart.
And you had a little card with your name on it, and you had to give it to them, and they had to scan it, and you had to, like, keep it in your little wallet. Like, it was truly, like, creating a culture around, I belong to Block. I'm a Blockbuster member.
Member. Also, like, do you remember, you do because you worked there, but, like, remember they went to, like, 3 for $20, like, mm-hmm. a 5 for $25. That was, like, those deals were, like, oh, I'm getting a steal. Also part of the branding.
New releases were more expensive, and they would do these special things where they'd be like, we can throw in a special new release or like a new movie. I remember when The Sixth Sense came out, we had a wall of The Sixth Sense.
It was like a takeover.
Yeah.
It would be a whole takeover of the movie, and you couldn't help but see that movie. And then what really would piss you off is you would go and be like, oh my God, Sixth Sense. And they'd be like, yeah, we don't have any copies. Then take this shit down. Why is there 7,000 copies of Sixth Sense up there and I can't get
one? It's building excitement, DeLon. The brand is
exhausting.
Showing you we had that many and that many people wanted to rent it. So you better come back tomorrow and hope that there's a copy.
And hope. And literally hope. You would be like, wait, when is the copy coming back? And at noon tomorrow, I'll be here.
Yeah, exactly.
But like most things in commerce, the brand grew and Blockbuster started to face competition from smaller local video rental stores because they copped to the game. They were like, oh, we can do it too. Other chains like Hollywood Video popped up. And in 2000, a little startup by the name of Netflix approached Blockbuster with an offer to sell their company to Blockbuster for $50 million. Y'all just wait for this because the jokes.
This fact shook me to my core. Talk about fumbling the bag, okay?
Okay.
Before we move on, DeLon, do you remember what you were doing in the year 2000?
In the year 2000. I know it's 3000, but I always, that's what always pops into my head when I think of it. What was I
we were sophomores in high school.
We were sophomores in high school. So I was wearing overalls.
Wait a second.
I loved this pair of Dickies overalls that I would wear all the fucking, like once a week.
Okay, not you bringing back train conductor chic.
And they were cute at the time. Like, oh, it was like the oversized, like, you know, TLC tip, you know. Motown Phillies.
So then were you wearing like one side down? Because that's the way you're supposed, you can't do both. You can't have both buckled up.
I hate you so very much because
not you
I was
looking
not,
like a former.
I wasn't cool enough to have one side down. I just wasn't cool enough. What were you doing?
I had just gotten cast in my first play at School of the Arts, and I really thought I was a big deal. But the thing I really remember was the Y2K panic. Do you remember how everybody thought that the year 2000 meant that all of the fucking clocks were going to explode?
Wait, it was like the actual world was going to implode.
We were.
Where did that even come from?
I don't know. Everyone was like, the clocks are not going to understand. the new year is going to start and the clock is going to be confused. Like, what did we think was going to happen? Our fucking microwave was going to explode?
We thought the like electricity was going to go away because of ones and zeros. It was so fucking weird.
Oh my God, so freaking funny. Okay, so before we jump back into the Netflix Blockbuster rivalry, it is worth noting that the Netflix that we know today was not the company that was going into that meeting with Blockbuster back in the year 2000. Okay, so there was no original content. There was no ta-dum sound when you fired up the app.
Iconic.
Because there was no app, okay?
Right.
Streaming did not exist yet. The Netflix streaming platform did not launch until 2007, and even then, it offered a very limited selection to start. So back in 2000, Netflix was just a DVD mailer program where you would get a few DVDs in the mail each month, and then you would mail them back when you were done.
Factoid, Netflix discontinued their DVD mailer program in September 2023. How crazy is that? After 25 years, what was the last time you got a DVD from Netflix, Fran?
I think I did it in like 2009 or 2008 when I was going to the Emmys for YouTube.
Wanted
to brush up on all the shows, and I got my little DVDs, and I was so pissed because I was trying to watch The Sopranos and they sent me the DVDs out of order. And I was like, this is season 4. I needed season 3. And I was like waiting for them.
It ruined your life. It ruined your whole
absolutely.
Life. Absolutely. So it's the year 2000. Fran is crying over Y2K. I'm wearing overalls. And Netflix are the big dogs in California, right? And for their first corporate retreat, they get a call from Blockbuster and they want to meet with them. This is a huge deal because at the time, Netflix was in trouble. The dot-com crash had just hit really hard. The DVD by mail rental service was catching on, but not fast enough for the company to be profitable. A few years prior, they turned down a big acquisition from Amazon, but now acquisition by Blockbuster seemed the perfect way to keep Netflix afloat.
So with this in mind, Netflix executives have been requesting a meeting with Blockbuster for months, and now they are in the middle of their first fancy corporate retreat, and Blockbuster calls and wants to meet them at 11:30 the following morning in Dallas. Now, Blockbuster has some balls on them because they have been ghosting Netflix for months, and now they're rolling through with a late night booty call. Dawn, are you accepting that call at the 11th hour? What you doing? You up?
Well, listen, it depends on how desperate. It sounds like Netflix is real desperate.
We heard you talk about the market, Dawn, so don't try to play.
Listen, you need to get it wet. You need to get a wet Netflix.
Ew, I love how we're turning this like dramatic story into like sexcapades. So Netflix co-founder Reed Hastings was like, listen, I know it's tight, but if we charter a plane for 5 a.m. the next morning, we can make it to Dallas for the 11:30 meeting with time to spare. But the co-founders were not all on board because chartering a private jet on such short notice was going to be like $20,000 and the company was already struggling.
Yo, $20,000. I can't wait. I can't wait for $20,000 on a private jet. So Hastings replied, we've been waiting for months to get this meeting. We're on track to lose a $50 million a year, whether we put up for this or not. Another 20 grand won't make a difference. And he's not wrong.
Okay. I'm sorry. Was that your frat boy?
That was my tech bro.
Yes. Tech bro. Yes. I loved it.
Again, I look forward to the day where I'm able to charter a plane for $20,000. Fun fact, the plane they actually chartered, because they did go through with this and they went to Texas for the meeting, was owned by Vanna White.
Okay. Give me another Vanna.
Okay. Listen, I guess Vanna's been on the air since 1947, so how does she not have a private plane? But it's kind of crazy.
So random that she was just like, on the side, you can borrow my plane. So the Netflix team met with Blockbuster CEO John Antioco, who had started working there just 2 years earlier, and he had really turned the business around after they had had some financial setbacks, including the very stupid decision to try and sell clothes. Who wants Blockbuster clothes? Nobody, okay? Under Antioco's leadership, he led Blockbuster through a successful IPO that raised $465 million the previous year. So in other words, he was really feeling himself as he went into this meeting with Netflix.
Well, let me tell you why he was also feeling himself and why they hired his ass. Because John Antioco was also the person that came up with the chalupa from Taco Bell. So the literally, he worked for Taco Bell, and he was the first.
He came up with the chalupa?
With the chalupa. So the chalupa, for you guys who don't know, who don't eat Taco Bell, it's literally a taco and then like a soft shell taco around
on
it with cheese.
On top of it, yeah.
Some people love that damn thing. He came up with
It's like an Inception taco. It's a taco inside a taco.
Taco inside a taco inside a taco.
Gotta get to the other taco. Yeah.
Totally. Wow. So in the meeting with Netflix, the team went over Blockbuster's strengths and then noted that there were areas where they could benefit from Netflix's expertise. They suggested joining forces with Netflix handling online stuff and Blockbuster focusing on retail stores. It was genius, to which Blockbuster, the team said, nice try, no cigar, deuces. What?
I know, it's ridiculous.
Wait, it's not for me. It's
it's
a no for me, dog.
Is that
Randy Jackson? It's a no for me, dog.
You trying to get into the Randy Jackson? The way you were like, it's a no.
Yeah, but it's not for me. It's
first of all, his voice doesn't even sound like that.
Wait, yes, it does, though. Randy Jackson sounds like he is like trying to make his voice lower to sound like more of a man.
It's definitely a no for me, dog. The voice is just not.
He sounds like when I'm talking to a straight dude. That's what Randy Jackson sounds like. It's put on performance. I refuse. I accept.
Okay, well, listen, I'm going to request a clip as evidence because I do not remember his voice being deep like that. But okay,
I'm going to give it to you.
No, for me, dog.
So Blockbuster said Netflix was just like every other business online out there. They weren't sustainable and would never make money. Things got heated and the CEOs were going back and forth for a minute before Blockbuster cut to the chase and asked Netflix for their price.
Not Blockbuster being like, you just are like every other bitch. Very rude. So Netflix said to Blockbuster, we want 50 million. And according to the Netflix co-founder Mark Randolph, the Blockbuster executives laughed us out of the room because the way that Blockbuster saw it, Netflix was a very small niche business. And to be fair, the company was losing money at the time. But as we know, hard times do not last forever. That meeting ended up being a $150 billion mistake.
Gosh, if you could go back, if you could go into the future.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way. So as of 2023, Netflix has 247.2 million paid subscribers worldwide, and it is valued at $183 billion. And mind you, even with all that money, Netflix don't want to pay no residuals to writers and actors, and they be raising the subscription fees every damn month. But the strike is over, so let me not stop my bag before.
Let me look at the fine print before I make some judgments, okay? Because I still need to read and ratify the But I'm at Netflix. I hope it's good though.
Netflix, we would love a job.
We would love to.
Please hire us.
So what killed Blockbuster in the end? Two things: debt and late fees. Simply put, Blockbuster kept its lights on by punishing their customers. The company was so reliant on late fees that when Blockbuster tried to get rid of them in 2005 to keep up with Netflix, it tanked the company's valuation overnight. Mm-hmm. Killing late fees ended up costing them $140 million in lost revenue in the first quarter alone.
And to make matters worse, Blockbuster was later sued for false advertising when it came to those late fees. Now, anybody that worked at Blockbuster or was a Blockbuster customer will remember that when you would purchase a video rental, there will be this long ass receipt that mm-hmm. would come out. Do you remember this? And it had mm-hmm. all the lawsuit details on it. It was always so annoying. You'd sit there and it would just be like printing for like minutes. And every customer is like, I don't want this fucking thing.
Just like killing trees, though. Just
literally.
Trees.
It was the CVS receipt before the CVS receipt.
Totally.
So essentially, the company had said that they had gotten rid of late fees. But if you did not return a DVD or a video within 7 days of renting, they would charge you the full price of the item as if you had bought it. But if you returned the movie, you could get your money back. But Blockbuster would then charge you a $1.25 restocking fee, which is just a fucking late fee with a different name. Okay.
Nuts.
So I just like the fact that they thought they could just get away with this and no one would notice.
Well, what's crazy though, Fran, too, is that like I think companies do this all the time.
Oh yeah,
like they do it all the
time. They're like, oh, it's a service fee. You buy a ticket to Beyonce, and they're like, there's a service fee, there's a printing fee, there's a fee. You're like, what are all these fees?
Beyonce's warm up fee. I literally rented a car recently and I was like, I thought this was supposed to cost X amount and it's mm-hmm. double that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She was well, that's this fee and that fee and this fee.
Yeah. They get you in the door with the like, oh, it's only going to cost you $20 to rent this car. And then they put all this extra stuff on there. And in this instance, they did end up, you know, having to pay this lawsuit, and it broke down to about $15 worth of coupons per customer. So, you know, it really hurt Blockbuster, but it didn't actually put anything in the customer's pocket. It was like, you get a coupon to get some more rentals here. Like, bish.
Right. And I'm sure, like, it fucked up the brand, too, if you're being sued in some ways, right?
Yes, so absolutely.
Blockbuster tried to adapt by offering online DVD rentals similar to Netflix and eliminating their late fees. But in the wise words of JoJo, you know, it's just a little too late. Da, 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 da.
We need to do a JoJo episode. P.S.
We have to do a JoJo episode, yo.
Because that bitch has talent from the Ruta to the Tuta.
And I am just so heartbroken that she didn't have she doesn't have the career she should, because she's so talented.
She's so talented.
Back to
bookmarking that.
Yes. Blockbuster filed for bankruptcy in 2010 due to mounting debts and the decline of its retail rental stores. But at its peak, Blockbuster had, again, over 9,000 stores worldwide. But by the time of its bankruptcy, it had only a few hundred stores left. Dish Network eventually acquired the remainder of Blockbuster's assets in 2011, and the last corporate store closed in 2014. Today, there is one final Blockbuster franchise store in Bend, Oregon. Mm-mm. Let me fix it, field trip, Fran. We going?
Sir.
I hate you so much. Fran's like, Delon, you are always talking about these field trips and we ain't going nowhere.
Listen, class, I'm sure some of y'all live in Oregon and you are shaking your head right now, but ain't nobody willingly going to Oregon.
To Bend? I don't even know where that, I mean, where is Bend in the Oregon? I don't even know.
I can't, you know what? What shape is Oregon? Tell me that. I don't know.
Most of them are like a square, right? I think of Idaho, which is like a club foot, but I don't know what Oregon, I think Oregon is a square, like Washington or something.
Oh my God. Well, class, correct us, because we are the children that were left behind, because we don't know
what shape. We are the children of our future.
We don't know what shape that state is. So. Okay. Now that we have dug into Blockbuster's history, it's time for us to fix the brand. But first, let's take a quick break.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. So now it's time for The Fix, where we each pitch how we would revamp Blockbuster's brand for today. Delon, why don't you go first?
Don't mind if I do. So Blockbuster suffered a fate that I feel like a lot of movie theaters are experiencing currently. Mm-hmm. Fewer people are just going to the movies, right? So I think Blockbuster should partner with an AMC, a Cinemark, and lean into the nostalgia of a fading era, right? Mm-hmm. But reinvigorate the culture around the movies. I think they should do like Blockbuster pop-ups at older movie theaters, reuse that slogan, make it a Blockbuster night, but like come to the movies, right? Come back to the movies. And I think they should start by showing like 80s, 90s nostalgia movies, early aughts movies. but show the ones that are like best experienced on the big screen. I think like an Independence Day, you know, like something that's really like boomy or whatever, or something
or like Star Wars or something.
Star Wars, you know, and like have like a whole series of them in one day. But just like Blockbuster, I think a really cool thing you might be able to add on to that is when we went to Blockbuster, part of it was choice, right? Part of the culture was choice. So maybe have a vote online to see, oh, what will this, you know, Blockbuster pop-up show? Do you want to see Star Wars? Do you want to see Independence Day? Do you want to see Bridesmaids? And based on the aggregate vote, they'll show that.
It's kind of like vintage meets like the choice of streaming where you get to pick what
exactly
you want, but well, and it's also so old,
but it also, like, to your point about the streaming, like, choice anxiety is so crazy. When
there's too many,
I will sit there and just scroll and scroll and scroll, and I'll be like, mm-hmm. I just wish, you know, give me three channels again where it was, yeah, like eight to ten I got to see these shows, because it's, the choice is overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, and there's so many choices that they don't actually promote. They can't even promote all the choices. So you're like,
can't.
Then you can't even know which ones are good and you're supposed to watch.
I know. And you end up watching a lot of shit. Sorry, Netflix. The other cultural thing they can lean into is bringing back the double feature. Remember the double feature? And leaning into the nostalgia of movie hopping, like, you know, just going from one movie to the other when you couldn't afford to pay or you didn't want to pay for all of the movies. So do a theater takeover. You pay for a day pass and you can hop through all the movies that are playing. Also, make it like a cookout, you know, at a barbecue. So you can buy food because movie theaters make a lot of money via concessions. So you're really creating something that we all know and like ballooning it out and making it more of a cultural nostalgia thing.
The double feature thing is interesting to me because look at the success of Barbenheimer. People going to see the Barbie movie.
Barbenheimer, I have not heard it called that.
You have?
Barbenheimer?
You never heard that? Yes, you were supposed to go. And this was truly something that the studios were pushing, because what ended up happening is Margot Robbie was going to the theater and she was showing her tickets to Oppenheimer. And she's like, I'm going to go watch the Barbie movie and now I'm going to go watch Oppenheimer. And Cillian Murphy, I think is how you say his name. He did the same thing. And Barbenheimer became a thing where people were going to go see both movies. And I think you're smart, this idea of like bringing back the double feature, but maybe even doing it in the type of thing where it's like, watch the original and the remake.
Because you know they're remaking everything, girl.
Literally, they're remaking everything. Or like maybe watch Pacino's first movie and his latest movie.
I love that.
You know what I mean? Or watch the first movie that like these two actors were in before they got married, and then like watch the movie where they were married. Like something like that, being really clever with how you pair those two together, I think would be really fun.
Well, and I love that. What I love about that too is like your storytelling within the storytelling, right? Ooh. You're creating again a culture around the movie, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just like coming for escapism, which is a lot of what movie going is. It's, oh no, we're actually collectively as a society and culture deciding to do this thing around nostalgia.
And so, it's really driving home that make it a blockbuster night.
Make it, which is again such a great slogan. And the last thing I will add to my fix is you could also add like a panel discussion, right? Mm-hmm. So have an Al Pacino come to the theater in New York or in Bend, Oregon, right? I'm sorry, we don't mean to laugh, y'all. We don't mean to laugh.
I just think I love a callback.
And yes, it's a good callback.
I hope that we get a message from somebody in Bend that's like, come down here, I'm gonna bend my foot in your ass. We're talking about my home state.
I hope you do, because you will be well within your damn rights. But add a panel discussion as a part of it to create culture around it. So those are
really
my fixes.
Smart. Okay, so mine feels a little similar in the same world. I would rebrand Blockbuster as a production company specializing in docuseries. So think Behind the Blockbuster. People love all of these retrospective documentaries. So I'm thinking that they would attach themselves to productions and handle all of the behind the scenes. So like, okay, this movie is coming out. The Blockbuster production company would be there to do all of the interviews and maybe even do all like the social media stuff. And so they'd be like, you guys focus on making the movie. We will focus on showing people how the movie was made. So then after you watch the movie, this is what kind of reminds me of your double feature thing. Maybe after you watch the movie, there's like a special offer to watch the Behind the Blockbuster feature.
I love that.
At like a discounted rate or something. So like after you watch the movie, it like comes up on your phone and it's like, here are interviews with the actors. It's, you know what it is? It's like I miss the DVD commentary aspect.
You actually watch that?
I did. I always thought it was, I liked being able to hear the director talk about like why they made certain choices and I watch them too, like on HBO, you know, they have like an after the episode and they like talk about it. Like, I always think those are really interesting. And we've lost that with streaming. And so I feel like, again, the blockbuster name is so like iconic that giving us that behind the scenes element of some of the movies that we all love. And again, they don't even have to start with like in production movies. They could go back into the catalog and be like, let's go interview some people and find out how these iconic movies were made.
I love that. I love that, again, because it's culture, right? It's creating culture around the film. And I go to Alamo Drafthouse. Have you ever been to an Alamo Drafthouse?
Love an Alamo.
Give me the food to my seat.
Give me some nachos while I'm watching the movie.
Come on. It is, listen, it is overpriced, but I'm paying every price.
And
okay,
the food, I love it, dare I say, the food
is bad.
Pretty good.
The food is fucking good. Yo, get that spicy chicken sandwich. Fuck what you heard.
The spicy chicken sandwich is bomb. I will also add, they have those like little recliner seats.
Yes, yes. I love an Alamo Drafthouse. So Alamo Drafthouse does this thing before their movies where they talk about, like, I think the last one I really saw that I remember was the latest Avatar movie. So they talk about not only the actors, but they give you like trivia, they give you factoids, they give you clips about what it was like to make that movie, interviews with James Cameron, Zoe Saldana, like it's creating a culture around it. So I think ballooning that out and creating a movie, a docu-style movie on the movie is so smart. I would stick around before and or after for something like that because I love documentaries, but I do like knowing how things are made and finding out like the intricacies of something. So I think that's really
cool. People love that stuff. And I, you know, you bring that up about Alamo Drafthouse. I went and saw that horror movie Talk to Me. I don't know if you've seen it. It was actually it was really good. And they had one of those things before it. And it was very interesting because the guys who made the movie are twin brothers from Australia and they started on YouTube. And it was their journey. It was genuinely so inspiring. I was like, I needed to fucking see this. But it was like their journey from making YouTube videos to then funding their first film and taking it to Sundance.
Wow.
And having Stephen King talk to them and see the movie and share how inspired they were. And to your point about like learning all the behind the scenes, I was like excited to see the movie, but I didn't really know anything about it. But after watching that whole like little making of behind the scenes beforehand, I was so pumped to watch the movie, and then the movie really delivered. So yeah, I think that would be so, so smart.
Yeah, I really love that. So now it's time for our favorite segment, The Glow Up, where we give props to those who turn their lives around, turn their brands around without our help. Fran, I went first, so why don't you go first for The Glow Up?
Okay, well, as we know, everything old is new again. But what has been so interesting to watch is that Gen Z has really become obsessed with Y2K, and they are bringing the camcorder back. I have been at multiple parties because, you know, I'm trying to be in these streets.
Okay.
And I've seen people with these giant camcorders more and more at parties.
With like a videotape?
Like an old school fucking put on your shoulder camcorder. You can't even put it in your purse. It's so big. And I'm seeing more and more retro footage on TikTok. And so I did some digging to find out, like, am I just imagining this, or is this a real thing that's happening? But it's taking over the internet, where lots of people are finding 20-year-old digital cameras at thrift stores, and they're using them to create content instead of using their iPhone, which, what a time. We are old.
Wow.
So some of the quotes that I pulled about this phenomenon is that Gen Z is looking at older camera qualities and they're sort of reacting against the smoothness and efficiency and slickness of social media. And so in addition to the potential to have more permanent technology, there's also this idea that like crisp and smooth isn't always better, which Gen Z really likes because they're really into the unpolished social media posts. You often see like
turn on your camera, you're still in bed, your bonnet's on.
Yes, your bonnet. Exactly. It's like all the TikTokers who like don't have makeup on or like they're filming from their car. There's no ring light. There's no glam. On Instagram, you'll often see like they call them like a photo dump, and it's just a bunch of like random people. Sometimes you're not even in the photo. It's like someone's shoes or like the back of someone's head, or it's like,
I need to start doing that. Shit.
A little out of focus. Yeah. It's like, it's this like authenticity thing that Gen Z is really craving. And I saw this viral TikTok that this girl was saying, this is your sign to get an old school digital camera and take a bunch of pictures. And some of the comments were like, oh, they came out so cute. And there was one comment that said, how do you get the photos afterwards?
Oh, oh my God.
It was hilarious. Back in the day, you had to put a cord in your camera and attach it to your computer to get the pictures out. Or you had to take the SD card to CVS and they would print the pictures for you. And so I just thought that was interesting.
It's so funny. It's like that. Do you see that social media post about the kids who were like looking at a rotary phone in their parents' basement?
And they had no idea how to use it.
And they called their parent and they were like, oh my God. I'm actually having the reverse of that, where I'm like, what do I do with the pictures on my phone? Print I take them. A lot of photos. And do
you
what?
Should print them. I have printed pictures all over my apartment and my friends, and they're all over my refrigerator. And sometimes I have like one of those little mini printers that prints like stickers. So sometimes I print pictures and I stick them like in my journal and stuff. Or, you know, she loves a gift. I love to print a picture of me and a friend and put it in the bag when I give you a gift.
You know what? Let me fix it. I'm fixing myself based on what you're saying. I'm like, why don't I just take my photos I take and like make a little photo book and like write a little note to friends, and that'll be like a gift.
Photo albums. Come on. Like, we used to sit around and like when you would go visit your grandma, she would pull out that photo album.
Yes.
And you would go through the photos. And I mean, the thing is like, I love how the iPhone has made creating things so accessible, but at the same time, like, if I dropped my phone in a pool, I would lose all those photos. I don't have any of them.
I know. Gone. I mean, the cloud's there, but like sometimes it's not in the cloud.
What if we have another Y2? What if the next is
shut up.
Y2?
Shut up. Get
Y2J.
Off the mic.
Y2J. I don't know.
I hate you. Wait, I just shot a short film, and this was really interesting, just about the smoothness and crispness of technology and video technology. There was like, I was looking at the camera that they were using, and there was like kind of a filter on the lens, and it was like sparkling. I was like, is there sparkles on your lens? And the DP, the director of photography, the cinematographer, was like, oh yeah, that just gives it texture. And I was like, oh shoot, they're adding texture to make something look like an older camera, right? Because the technology is too crisp and too perfect.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's so interesting. Also, you better flex. I shot a short film recently.
Oh, listen, I have people. I know friends.
Okay. So what's your glow up?
So my glow up is a little surreptitious, but of the same ilk of like, you know, the old becoming new again. Have you noticed that platform shoes have made a comeback in like the last 5 years?
Oh, listen, platform shoes never left this house.
Did they never? Oh, wait, but I feel like you wear a wedge, though. You have a platform shoe.
I do like a
wedge. Because you're a tall dame.
I do like a wedge. You know what it is? Oh, God, I feel so old. I like a platform because it gives you height without putting all the pressure on your foot, because the top of your foot is also lifted. Whereas like when you normally have a heel, your toes are straight down and you're putting a lot of pressure on the balls of your feet. But a platform kind of lifts those bad boys up, and it's almost like a high heel a mini heel disguised as a high heel, if that makes
sense. It's a high heel for an old person, yeah.
Yes, it is. It's an orthopedic high heel.
Literally. I mean, it literally is. But like the platforms I've seen, at least recently, just like give 70s, like, you know, I'm talking about Bee Gees, Donna Summer, pastel bell bottoms, and they're kind of not stylish. Converse is kind of really
leaned into them. The Converse ones are weird looking.
I have some pictures in here.
Clunky.
Yeah, they're like this big white chunk.
Oh God,
thing.
No, this is sorry, I just recoiled. This is okay. You know what they call these? These are called dad sneakers.
I call it a moon shoe, guys. It's like it looks, I don't know, it's like a big chunky bottom with a huge lace. It comes all the way up to your ankle, and it's like a serrated bottom. It's terrible.
No, I hate it. Also, serrated bottom sounds like a homophobic slur.
he tore my dick up. Serrated bottom.
Thought you got a cheese grater in your butt.
I hate you so much. Oh, not a cheese grater. You're so dumb. Oh my God, I'm dead.
Well, what a note to end this episode okay. on. I have tears in my eyes. That wraps up this week's episode. So now we would love to hear from you. Do you think that Blockbuster could make a comeback? What would you tell them to do? Or maybe you would like to suggest a musician, an actor, a brand, or a whole concept that we should fix in a future episode. Hit us up on Instagram at FixItPod.
And class, we have gotten so many great suggestions on IG that we cannot wait to record. So please keep them coming.
Yes, and very exciting news. We now have an email address. So if you would like to suggest an episode topic or you want to ask us for some advice, please drop us a line, lemmefixitpod@gmail.com.
Wait a minute. I love the idea of like letters from the class episode where we pitch fixes for our listeners. Ooh. You know, move over, a Jan Levan Zant, fix your life.
Yes.
We're going to fix for you. We got you. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app. I'm DeLon.
And I'm Francesca. And this was Let Me Fix It.
Hey, yeah.
No idea. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Where are you? Where in the world is DeLon Grant?
I'm in San Diego. I'm in Minnesota. I'm visiting some family and friends. Yes. I haven't been in Minnesota in almost a decade. So
wow.
Yeah, right. What is time? Well, listen, a whole pandemic happened. So like that is part of, you know, whatever. Yeah, so I'm in Minnesota. I got a little Airbnb because my sisters and I are having a little siblings moment. Mm-hmm. I'm in Minneapolis because one of my sisters.
Yeah, you and the siblings thing. Can't relate, but love that for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.